You are tuning in to the Game Sports Show, powered by the Game Entertainment and Media, or known as GEM. This is the Little Caesars Pizza Special Edition Upload. Little Caesars Pizza in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, where there are 3 locations within the community and many more locations nationwide. Little Caesars Pizza is the largest carryout pizza chain internationally. Convenient, delicious, and cost-effective is a brief yet simple way to describe Little Caesars Pizza. You can order online through their user-friendly online pizza portal. Why wait any longer? Get on those phones, download the app, or get on your computer and make that order right now. The Game Sports Show and GEM, thanks, Little Caesars Pizza, in particular Little Caesars Pizza in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, for its support. Booyah, and it's time for the Game Sports Show special edition upload, powered by the Game Entertainment and Media, GEM for short, along with the GameSportsShow.com. We are inside the Game Entertainment and Media studios. Hey, we're very happy you're able to join us for our recording. Now, getting to our special edition co-host here on this upload. The co-host is brought to you by Compass Imaging Group and Demansky Office Interiors. A man with over 1,000 professional games. He's been all over the world. He has wicked speed. He has a wicked clap bomb from the top of the circle, mostly with his head down. And he has a hard time beating yours truly in men's league games, though. The one and only, my main co-host on these special edition uploads, Brendan Brooks. Brooksy, how's it going, pal?
It's going good, man. It's going good. Good to be back. Got a great guest today, good longtime friend, and I can't wait to catch up.
Oh, it's going to be good. And now getting to our special edition guest, a very special guest, an individual who spent his life on the ice, dropping his mitts and being a trusted warrior night in and night out. He played in the OHL for the London Knights for 3 seasons before his transition to university hockey and the professional levels. Within his OHL career, he got 317 penalty minutes, and his career in the professional level, he totaled over 1,800 penalty minutes, hundreds of fights in his career, and now the former hockey player is a medical cannabis speaker and advocate growing own medicine. We are so lucky to have this guest come on and explain his story both on and off the ice. The one and only, Rob Fred. Rob, thanks for coming on, and how's it going?
Doing great, guys. Thanks, David, for the intro, and obviously Brooksy and I don't need an intro, but it's so nice. He's been a good friend of mine, and we've been connected over the years, and he was such a young influence on our Quad City team, and it's great to be here with you guys and get to share my story and connect with you guys and your listeners. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we are certainly honored, and I'm also honored to have you on Facebook as a friend, too, and you accepted my ad today. I was very pleased with that.
Yeah, thank you, David. That's awesome.
Heading to an easy topic I want to bring up here right off the hop. Let's go outside your story for a moment and get into today's game for a second. I'm always curious to see what former players, even current players, are kind of doing now with not being involved in the game or even being within the game in some capacity. Are you watching the today's game a lot? And if so, who's your favorite team to watch and what made you start cheering for that team?
Hey, Dave, pump the brakes for a second, buddy. It's my turn now. Former first rounder, Rob Shrimp, and I got a message for your listeners. Head on over to 44visionhockey.com and check out our online coaching platform. Back to you, Dave. Enjoy the show.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Dave. And yeah, I'm still interconnected with the game. Hockey's embedded in my bloodlines, like every young Canadian growing up. And obviously, I'm older now, but I still follow my Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm from Burlington, Ontario, and, you know, at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, that was my first days of ever watching, and my first ever game, I saw Edmonton and Toronto play, and Wayne Gretzky was playing, so yeah, obviously I'm still a Leafs fan, and I enjoy the new hockey. It's different, obviously. I don't have to tell you guys about that. The skill level's up to what it used to be, and, you know, the speed and everything else, and you know, it's a different game now, but I still enjoy it. I stream all Leaf games and end up, watching the highlights of a lot of NHL games and even the minor leagues, too. So I do stay connected. Yeah.
Smart man being a Leaf fan. I guess we're both suckers for pain is the way.
Yeah, you're right there. Yeah. Yeah, now, our time's coming. Our time's coming, David.
Well, it's got to be, especially with Sioux native, original home of the Game Sports Show, Kyle Dubas at the helm. I'm sure a lot of Sioux individuals would love to see that. Now, I want to get to the background of you and Brooksy as well. Brooksy, I'll slide over to you to kind of get your take on how you and Rob got connected. Then I'll go to Rob because then maybe he might be a little bit more chirpy rather than honest.
Yeah, no, you know what? Rob and I hit it off right away. It was my first year pro going to probably one of the best minor league teams and places to play at the time. I think we had every game was sold out. I think it was just over 9,000 a game. It was just a great spot. I was an 18-year-old kid. And I think, you know, I think the next youngest guy on the team might have been Rob and another teammate of ours named Mike Mellis, who was, I think, 24 at the time. You know, so for me, you know, I looked up to Rob, and these guys kind of took me under their wing and kind of helped mold me into who I am today. So it's been a great experience getting to know these guys.
I kept it nice, Rob. What about you? What's your comment to say about how I?
No, it's that was my second year professional that year in Quad City, and I played on a young team in the East Coast Hockey League, and you know, that was my first taste of pro the year before in Louisville, and unfortunately I had a very lengthy suspension from an incident that happened in Toledo, but at the end of the day, I ended up in Quad City with a much older, experienced team, and Brooksy was right. You know, I was just maybe 23, 24, and he was obviously very young, and we never saw that before. You know, I didn't even see that in the East Coast League. You know, we didn't have any 18, 19-year-olds, but I knew right away that, you know, this kid had explosive speed. He wasn't afraid to, you know, stick up for himself and teammates too, right? And it was just nice to play with him and just see the fire that he had. But just, you know, I think that really helped develop his career. And we know that he had a lengthy career and, you know, playing almost into his 40s and whatnot. But that's just the way Brooksy played, right? He had a lot of talent, a lot of speed too, breakaway speed, just everything. But he wasn't afraid to, you know, stick up for his teammates. And that's obviously, you know, with me being kind of more like an enforcer than, you know, what Brooksy brought to the game, but that's what kind of interconnected me, him, Mike Mellis, and a few of the younger players on a good Quad City team and an organization that was used to winning before we showed up, right? So it was a good year. It was a good year for us all.
It's always good to know the background of, you know, when Brooksy brings in particular guests, to know the stories. And the ones that I hear constantly are, you always stuck up for your teammates, Brooksy, and the toughness and all that. So I didn't get the chance to see that. And when I've been on your teammate for some tournaments here in town, I don't see any of that. I see you more back and away nowadays, it seems like.
Oh, yeah. I'm just sitting back and enjoying losing to you, obviously. So that's been the new thing. That's never going to happen again, just so you know. Now you've just awoken me, so this never happens again. They, you know what? I was able to do it because I had guys like Rob on my team that made me feel bigger than I was. So, you know, that was a huge, huge help for me. But I want to get back to our special guest and good friend here, Rob. You know, I want to go back and, you know, talk about your playing days and where it all started and, you know, your first year with the London Knights, which is a humongous organization, one of the best in the OHL or junior for that matter. I want to talk a bit about your third year there in London, you know, how great of a season you had in 94-95, 16 goals, 16 assists, 216 PIMs. You know what I mean? You did it all that year. So kind of, you know, talk about it and let us know what the heck went on there.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, obviously, you know, when I speak about just, you know, my career too, I always do reflect back here to London, and I'm living here. This is where my daughter is. This is, you know, where I started out in hockey, right? So, yeah, the London Knights mean a lot to me, the alumni, and I was very blessed to get drafted in the 10th round when I didn't really even know much about the OHL, right? I was a baseball player. I played with Team Ontario. I was a prospect with MLB, too, with San Diego, and even the Blue Jays were looking at me young. So hockey was not really there. It was secondary. And then, unfortunately, you know, my mom got cancer, and Brooksy knows that. I lost her young, in around 16 and that, and then I got drafted to the Knights, and I had a younger brother. My family was here, so I didn't want to accept that full ride scholarship that I had, you know, from a couple schools in the state. So I ended up putting baseball away. I wanted to stay close to home, and I came to London, and, you know, I was 6'2", you know, the same size I am now, you know, at 17 years old, but a late draft pick. So I was told early on that, you know, the type of brand of style that I was drafted to London and what I needed to provide the team in order to make it. And my first year in London, I was the last cut, but they liked me so much, and we had a good team that year, that they ended up sending me down to the London Nationals, and I played with Mike Legg, who ended up being a star at Michigan. And, you know, they put me on his wing, you know, to protect him too and give him more room out there. And Legger, yeah, he was like a stud, right? Like 130 points in, I don't know, maybe half the games, right? So I really developed, and I practiced every day with both the Nationals and the Knights. And I had an injury my first year in Junior B with the Nationals and with my collarbone. So I had to kind of rehab throughout the year, but then I got called up into the playoffs in London too, right? And played every game, and I stuck to my role. I didn't have a point, obviously, but I was a fourth liner, and I finished my checks, and I got in a fight, and, you know, I helped actually, you know, we beat Guelph, I think, in seven games, and I was all part of that. So it was good. And then, you know, my second year was like my first year, right? So I just built off of that. And then, you know, my third year was like my second year, and I was running out of time, right? You know, with the way that the NHL scouts and things look at you. And I don't think I was ever going to be an NHL player, but I knew that I had it in me and how I was progressing to play the sport professionally. And that got me up as a free agent with the St. Louis Blues. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm in camp after my third year, you know, sitting beside Brett Hull, and I got Al MacInnis and Esa Tikkanen and Fierzy and all these guys there. And I was just like, wow, I got a chance to reflect back on those two quick years and the way that I developed, but it was through hard work, and I got there, and I knew that I wasn't going to stay there. And they offered me a minor league contract, but that was one of the first years that the OHL, we had our scholarship money, and our captain, Davey Gilmore, was out at St. Thomas, and Al McAdam was coaching there, and Al played in the NHL, and he was just a very nice man outside of coaching. And so I decided not to go pro at that point in time, and I went and spent a couple years at St. Thomas University, and I had some really good years there too, and worked on my skill. And then that's what I ended up getting signed with the Islanders, but in a minor league contract, and I left my lap before my last year of school. So I forfeited my scholarship, but, you know, I knew the type of player I was, and I wanted to, you know, continue that journey. And I, at that point in time, I missed sticking up for my teammates, and I couldn't do it out, you know, in CIAU hockey, right? So it was good. I reflect back to my career, and I'm very blessed that London drafted me, and, you know, it came at a price, and, you know, Brooksy knows, and we'll talk about that and what I deal with now, but I would never take it back, right? It's I helped a lot of teammates, like Brooksy said too, right? And try to take care of guys and make sure that they're okay too, right? Because hockey is a game, you know, of not just, you know, violence, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, we're a team and we stick up for each other. And Brooksy did that too, night in and night out, right? Even, you know, if I was ever in trouble, he would step in. That's just the way that we did things.
So your last year, like playing in London, you know, you played with Jason Allison, you know, that is a man who went on to, you know, play for the Boston Bruins, be the captain, a world junior stud. You know, you played with him when he was, you know, just coming up. And did you know right away that this guy was going to be a guy that's going to go on and be the type of player that he went on to be as a, you know, NHL captain, which is a humongous feat?
Right away, Brooksy. Yeah. Allie just had, there was something about him that, you know, he wasn't very fast, right? He just that was the knock on him for years, was his speed, right? But he had the control to slow the game down with his mind, right? I saw him deke four guys out standing still. That's how good this player was, right? And to watch him in his first year in London too was just like myself or any rookie, right? If you look at Ali's stats, you know, nothing special, you know, and being a first rounder, but Bob Giroux, our scout, saw something in Jason, and obviously we as teammates, right? And I look at Jason's, you know, career in the OHL and me practicing with him every day and him even coming back in the 94 lockout and them putting me on his line, right? I had an overtime goal with him against the Sioux, you know, got us, you know, into first place, or I don't know what it was, but this guy had the potential, and he proved it in the World Juniors too. I think he led the entire World Juniors in scoring, right? But again, a lot of knocks on him. He didn't have the speed, right? But he could, like I said, long reach. He just very smart hockey mind and a good teammate too, right? And would do anything for us. And he could fight too. You know,
yeah,
Ellie
was a big body for sure. He was a big body.
He led Boston in scoring, Brooksy, for a few years, right?
And another great organization.
Yeah, that's right.
But so going back, you know, when you mentioned, you know, talking about London Knights and then going to St. Thomas, you know, the Canadian university there, you know, what was the main reason on deciding to go to school? Like, what was your reason instead of going right to pro? You know, I'm sure you could have got a chance to go there. Like, what was the reason behind going to St. Thomas?
Yeah, the straight up reason and the truth about it was my grandfather, right? My Vince was his name. I never met my biological father. So, you know, after my mom passed away, you know, I had a stepfather too, but my grandfather was educated, always was, and, you know, always pushed me to do well in sports. And, you know, I had a tough time. I was a redhead, full of energy, and, you know, had some ADHD and some other things, right? But sports was always an outlet, and that's what pushed me, right? And obviously, you know, I had a full scholarship kind of at those times and days. It was kind of under the table and things were done, right? But I had school paid for. And, you know, I was just a very average student in high school. So, you know, it was a big step for me. And I did well. You know, I did very well. My marks were good. But again, I had to apply myself. It was just like playing, right? So I'm glad I went. It's helped me now in what I'm doing today, right? So, and the hockey was good. The hockey, we had, you know, a couple hundred point men from each league, the WHL, the Quebec League here, right? And it was good hockey. We could have beat any East Coast League team at that point in time. That's how good it was, right? And it's still good, Canadian University, because of that too, because of the OHL and the CHL alumni grads that are staying home and playing.
Yeah, see, it's always good too after you play. Like, you know, if you go to the Canadian University, a lot of things that a lot of experts have brought forward was that you don't get as recognized in the professional level is what they say. But hey, I always remember a famous quote that I was told from a scout that said, if you're a good enough hockey player, they'll find you on a backyard rink, okay, in the middle of Sioux Lookout. Now, obviously, that was when I was told that. It embeds in my mind because the Canadian University route is, it's like you mentioned, it's those ex-OHL guys that went to play that, or even some players that didn't play in the OHL that are still good damn hockey players that are getting the opportunity to play at a high level. So it's certainly good hockey. Couldn't agree more there. Now, the thing I want to backtrack to for just 1 second was that enforcer role in the OHL. I want to bring up, was there an arena, that you felt the most heat? Like, was there an arena that you went into, you know, and there that you knew that they were like, okay, we got to get Rob out of town, or we want our guy to fight Rob, or just a hostile environment? Is it Sault Ste. Marie, or was there even more a hostile one?
I believe it was pretty much our whole, you know, Western Division, and that's with the Sioux, and that's with the Windsor Spitfires, and, you know, here in London, you know, we had a team, tough team, right? And, you know, my second, third year, you know, obviously I was willing, and, you know, in Detroit too, right, with Eric Cairns and Sarnia. I had Eric Bolton and a good friend of mine today too in the Sioux, Rhett Tremblay, Andre Payette, you know, Sean Gagnon. Like, tough, a very tough division. We'll never see that again in our lifetime, boys. That just won't happen, right? So, yeah, the Sioux, I always loved going there. The fans were right over top of us, right? We had a brawl there. It was just intense, right? You just felt that feeling and how passionate the Greyhound fans were, right? And still are today. So that's a memory that will never, ever, you know, I won't forget, right? And just to feel that, and I miss it, right? Even though I'm injured because of it today, right? Like I said, I wouldn't take any of it back, right? And it's so nice up there in the Sioux. I got to get back there. I'd love to see a game. Hopefully, you know, all this COVID stuff ends and, you know, we can start watching these kids again play, right? Because just the tradition and passion that's up there where you guys are, like, wow, right? Nothing I ever experienced before, not even in pro. It's such an amazing division that I was involved with Right.
So, Rob, you talk about the, you know, the old arena there here in Sault Ste. Marie and how great it was with the old barn style of hockey in the OHL, you know, where the fans are right on top of you. And, you know, I've been to a few games and it's amazing how nice these arenas are now, you know, before you get to pro. They're like professional arenas now. Do you feel do you feel that that's changed? Kind of that that feeling, and it's taken away from the from that passion that just brings the roar out of you, because it was a barn burner game all the time in these arenas where you were yelling at the crowd was yelling at you. I find that it's changed so much that you kind of miss that excitement as a fan a little bit with these beautiful arenas, which, don't get me wrong, they're amazing. It's amazing to see the game and all that, but I find you miss that essence of that right on top of you grit of a hockey game.
What you're speaking about, Brooksy, right now is the way that the culture of the game has changed, right? Whether it's science speaking at us right now, you know, with the long-term effects of multiple concussions and just a lot, right? And obviously, you know, you guys know that I've been an advocate to remove fighting out of the Canadian Hockey League, just with what I know and what I've been through and how young the kids are and we were when we were allowed to fight, right? But that was edge of your seat stuff. And then, like you said, Brooksy, you've got these old barns like the Windsor Arena and in the Sioux and that, where the fans are sitting right over top of you and they're at the edge of their seats too, waiting for a scrap, and they can feel it too, right? All the fans knew when it was coming, right? And the players did too. That was electrifying. But at the end of the day, now we do know, right, that, yeah, that a lot of trauma, right? And just a lot, right? And we've lost, you know, a lot of Canadian Hockey League former enforcers too. And I could list off, you know, a dozen names right now and just go. And a lot of, you know, their early death came from just that, right? So, at the end of the day, yeah, it becomes a very deep discussion. And there, obviously, there's a lot of writers out there writing about it now. And I just finished Rick Westhead, who's a friend of mine. And Rick works with TSN. Obviously, you guys know him, and came out with his book, Finding Murph, after a short documentary on Joe Murphy, right? And, you know, that whole story is about, you know, traumatic brain injury. And it started young, too. And it even started at the NCAA level too, right? Not just in junior. So it becomes a very intense kind of cultural chat of and changing of the arenas. And obviously, you know, we saw some of those rinks, Brooksy, in Quad City, and now we got one here in London too, and in the Sioux, right? There are many NHL rinks, and now the game's changed, right? It's a culture shock to us, right? But hey, I understand it, and I understand why. Right. It's just a lot of people don't like to talk about it. And that's what I do. Right. I'm an advocate and I always will be. Right. And I still love the game and always will. But we're not going to forget. Right. It's just, but it's good. It's good. These conversations are great. Yeah. Good question, Brooksy.
I'm not going to lie. I miss the old game in comparison to the new one, to be totally honest. Like, it's exciting to watch the speed and the talents of many games that we can mention, but I do miss that, more of that hitting harder, the want to hit, it's just dropping the mitts. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of issues with coming to that with the fighting, right? So there's two sides of that. But one thing that I want to jump into, that even speaking of dropping the mitts, is within the professional levels, Rob, you, from 1997-98 season to 2004-2005, you totaled 1,850 pounding minutes. A total of 1,866 to be exact. Yes, I hockey DB'd that. Which included a boatload of fights, obviously. And to each team you were a part of, was this communicated to you by superiors in the organization to bring forward on a nightly basis? Like, was it consistent conversation night in and night out for you, that fight? Or was it something you embraced, or how'd that all go?
Of course it was, right? It was, see, within the game too, you know, you don't, that's just how the passion within, you know, a lot of coaches and a lot of owners and a lot of scouts and a lot of everything that's embedded inside the game, it was included in the old culture of the game too, right? So a lot of coaches, you know, didn't even have to say things, but I was told things, right? And sometimes it was just a look, right? Or it was a pat on the back, like you go, right? And then you get into lineup changes and line changes and, you know, coaches putting squaring guys off that we knew that that was time to go. And Brooksy can reflect to that too, right? So there was a lot of that subliminal culture that was put within the game too, right? Which obviously, but you get to learn that over time, and that's your role. And if you don't play your role, then you ain't playing, right? And if you're not doing your role, you're going to get traded, waived, everything else. So you do what you can do to obviously stay in the lineup and then stay with the organization and the boys and guys that you love and the fans too, right? Which meant obviously a lot to all of us, right? More than anything, you know, when we're putting on that jersey.
Yeah, that's big. Brooksy.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, I want to go on from that and into kind of what's going on now and what you're doing now, because, you know, it has a lot to do with your fighting. And yeah. I just want to talk about, you know, what you've been going through and all the stuff that has happened, you know, since you left the game and because of these concussions that you've had. You know, I want to know how you got involved with what you're doing and how this has changed your life. I know how it's changed your life. And yeah. I just want our listeners to kind of hear what you've been going through and about all the stuff that's happened.
Oh, that's a great question. It could be a long answer, but at the end of the day, it's not all about fighting, guys. Like, you know, obviously I'm an advocate for kids, like I did explain, and, you know, I don't believe that our children should be or an adult should be, even if it's, you know, going through lineup matches and things like that and forcing kids into that position, right? But, you know, I didn't really, you know, I fought 6 or 7 times my first training camp in London and in inter-squad games and over 2 days. And I was bloodied and I had stitches and it was a lot of trauma. It really scared the shit out of me, right? That's just the way it was. And, you know, I'm thankful for it because I've learned a lot and I'm able to advocate now and make right decisions and speak like I am to you guys, right? So without that, I don't know where I'd be today and maybe I wouldn't be around. You know, there was a point in time where I was self-medicating before I was properly diagnosed. And I, by the way, you know, for the listeners, I was diagnosed in 2013 with Parkinson's disease, early onset Parkinson's. And luckily I've been able to, you know, sustain that progression and not getting there. But I have a secondary one too, dystonia, and I can't control my muscles because of my concussion history, right? And I believe it was my second year at Jovanovski. We were playing Windsor and the puck got dumped in. It was a kind of a weird line change. And I ended up going back for a near icing call and Ed shot off of the bench because I was running around the shift before and he drove me headfirst into the boards from behind. I don't remember much after that, right? I was knocked out cold. And, you know, so it's not always about fighting, right? But then, you know, I'm back playing Friday night and held out just maybe one or two practices and then back in the next game, right? Because our team and, you know, and I blamed team doctors at that point in time because they did know that, you know, I wasn't well. And but you're inserted back in the lineup because, you know, the team means more than me and I have to stand up for my team, right? So then, you know, I'm fighting a guy like Eric Cairns and Bolton and you know, Payette. And so it's like 3 and 3 and 3 nights after taking that hit, right? So that's when things get really, really, yeah, scary, right? And what we do know now and with the long-term effects causing myself neuromuscular disease at the end of the day, and then we start hearing about chronic traumatic encephalopathy with CTE and things like that, right? That becomes, yeah, it becomes a concern. It becomes something that, you know, all parents need to really open up their ears about, and the leagues have to start taking accountability too and really looking to, and I'm not looking for that support or anything like that, but, you know, these leagues are profiting a lot of money and they're neglecting. There's a lot of guys that are sick and they're changing the rules now because of it, but leaving guys too in the dark, right? And we've seen a lot of guys commit suicide and just a lot, and self-medicating too, you know, with drugs that they shouldn't be. And that's what's led me to, obviously, with medical cannabis, and that was brought to me, you know, by the hospital, right, for my condition, and that's what I do now, and I'm educating other players, too, about, you know, the benefits of plant medicine versus just them self-medicating with alcohol, pills, a lot of stuff that I've done, and others continue to do, and those that have in the past and didn't wake up, so it's a lot, guys. It's a lot, but hopefully I answered your question and able to share a bit. You know, it's tough.
Well, Rob, do you think, like, you know, it's so crazy, you know, like you said, like there's so many different ways to get concussions and all that stuff, and how, you know, we were taught to just play through it. You know what I mean? There's probably times that I shouldn't have played, but I did. Because that's what we were taught back in that old mentality, which now we know is wrong. But back then, you know, it was wrong not to play. Where we were growing up, if we didn't play, we were soft. You know, you never know. They might have sent us down because you didn't have that protection that you do now with the insurances and all the health awareness, which I think has been gone a lot better for the game. You know what I mean? I do believe that. I know you're such a big believer of it. And, you know, it's just kind of crazy to think about some of the stuff yourself and others have played through, because that was our mentality. That's what we were taught.
That's right. No, it was the culture of the game. That's what we were taught. That's what was embedded in us, in our role. Right. And obviously, you know, that's why I had a lot of respect for you, Brooksy, is because, you know, you could play the game. You could be that 30, 40 goal scorer, but you could have those key fights too and the big hits and everything else, right? And then if you were missing, you know, one or two of those components, then maybe you wouldn't have got up to Manitoba too, right? And you proved that you could play at the next level too, right? So at the end of the day, you're right on. It's just, They embed our roles. They give us our roles. And if we don't play that role, then you become expendable because there's another guy behind us that's coming right up, right? So at the end of the day, you're not going to sit out when maybe, you just said it. Maybe there was times where you needed rest and to be able to heal. And if that's the brain, that's what we know now, right? That's the most vital and important part of our genetic makeup is our brain, right? And we're getting rocked every night, right? It's just we were more concerned then about knees, shoulders, hands, everything else, and now things are different, right? But for a better reason, and that's obviously for the kids behind us, right? And protecting them.
See, and now, like, one thing that I saw interesting, I did a lot of background research because I was just fascinated about everything with it. And one thing that I found, and I was sharing this with Brooksy prior to us calling you, Robin, and getting this recording going, was according to the Globe and Mail, they stated in an article that you suffered from at least 75 concussions. At least. Now, I don't know if that's an accurate number, if it's close, if it's up or down, but despite that, it doesn't matter if it's up or down or even close to it, that is a lot, right? And that is not healthy for the human brain, obviously. Can you just walk us through the concussions, the diagnosis with all that, and how everything got determined to get that number and everything just involving around that?
It was 2016. I ended up meeting John Branch of the New York Times, sports writer, been a big advocate, did Derek Bougard's story too. And we chatted, and John, I knew him from back when I was playing in the West Coast League. He was writing in Colorado, so we were kind of friends, and I was calling him. I was going through a separation with my marriage. I was in a lot of pain. I didn't have proper treatment. I knew what was going on. I just couldn't find that, you know, the right doctors and try to get treatment to feel better, right? And John ended up reaching out to James Myrtle. And James Myrtle's the Leafs writer, and he's now the lead editor-in-chief of The Athletic. And James and I became friends, and that's what started that story, that particular story. And it was called One Last Fight, but it wasn't about me. It was about, you know, what I kind of went through and what I saw, and really trying to reach back to parents and the leagues, but not just that, to former guys that I fought and teammates and that too, that are struggling with the long-term effects of concussions in conjunction with chronic pain, right? And that's what a lot of people don't understand. And even today, and it drives me nuts, is that many of us that do, you know, suffer traumatic brain injury and multiple concussions from the game, a lot of us had, you know, a lot of pretty serious injuries too with surgeries. I had multiple surgeries on my hand, my shoulder, like just a lot of stuff, right? And over time, that becomes very difficult to treat too at the medical level, especially when the brain's involved too, right? And that's when I started learning, David, about, you know, this is how, this is serious, right? And at the end of the day, when Health Canada doesn't understand, you know, the severity of traumatic brain injury in high impact sports, that's what set me off. And that's what that article was. And 75 concussions, to answer your question, David, that's low, because when I look back after that hit with Joe Vanoski, right, I started every fight I was seeing stars, every hit I was seeing, I was throwing up in between periods. My teammates used to make fun of me, saying, Fritter, you know, you're 220 pounds, 6'2", and you're, what are you, an anorexic? Because they'd hear me, you know, in between periods vomiting, right? And that happened for years. And Brooksy even remembers that too. In Quad Cities, I used to throw up in between periods too, right? And there was one point I thought it was nerves, right? But then after I retired, David, he's a neurologist, psychiatrist, involved in pain psychology, along with traumatic brain injury. Like that's, yeah, I knew what was going on. The doctors knew, they documented it. And, you know, that's why I'm here today. And that's any former player that struggles with what I have going on or similar, I'm there. And that's why I go on podcasts. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing in the medical cannabis space too. And we can talk about that a bit more, guys. But that's what kind of led me to what's going on today, is just the treatment, right? And the NHL is not going to offer it. Jeez, you know, Gary Bett, they had a rheumatologist instead of a neurologist involved, right? And that was throughout that entire NHL concussion lawsuit. And it was a joke too, right? Like guys got nothing by the end of the day with lawyer fees. Like, you know, it just sickened me. But now there's another lawsuit now against the Canadian Hockey League, and I'm involved with it. It's against serious injury, including traumatic brain injury. And we're in Supreme Court right now in BC. And, you know, it's just, it's not about, you know, us putting down the game or anything. It's about, you know, trying to get guys proper help and save lives too. So there's a lot going on right now, guys. A lot. Yeah.
Now, Rob, like, I know you've kind of touched on it a little bit, because I know you were such a good teammate and, you know, you would do anything for the guy beside you. And I know that was your mentality. And my question is, like, you know, from what you're going through now, which I couldn't even imagine what it's like for you, because it's something that you live. And I think you have to have what you have to actually know what you're going through. Do you have, like, any regrets, you know, sticking to this role as an enforcer, knowing what you know now? Or would you completely change it? And, you know, even if it was, you know, as fighting was as much as it was then, would you change it now? Because I know you care about the teammates, but there's something that's bigger than that, and which is keeping you healthy. And, you know, because you are such a great guy, but trying to live with this, I couldn't imagine what it's going through. So, you know, I just curious, you know, would you change that? Would you change the way you played at all because of this? Because I know you loved the game and you wanted to do everything you could for your teammates. And that's the way it was back then. And I understand that. But knowing what you know now, how much would you have changed?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Brooksy. And, you know, health is number one. It doesn't matter, right? We live this life, we want to stay as healthy as we can. And, you know, obviously for our kids and my daughter Tegan, she means the world to me, right? And without her, like I said, I lost my mom young, right? So Tegan's that next, you know, the last connection that I have to my mother, right? And so I look back now and I look at the game, and of course, you know, with what I've dealt with in the cards medically, I wouldn't have played, right? No, I'm in a lot of pain, a lot of chronic pain, extreme high thresholds of pain. My muscles, I can't control them, right? So the little bit about neuromuscular disease is the more activity I have, and that's even just walking the dog, right? My brain, because of the concussions and the long-term effects, doesn't have the ability to send proper signals for inflammation, so I'm constantly inflamed, right? And yeah, thankfully, you know, I'm a patient at Parkwood Hospital, and I'm involved in physical medication, and that's along with my medical cannabis prescription from the hospital. But at the end of the day, no, I wouldn't wish this upon my worst enemy, right? And it has taken a toll on, you know, my relationship with my daughter, because I can't do the things I wish I could do or a normal parent can do. And that's work in the open labor market too, right? And I'm trying to transition off of CPP disability. And at the end of the day, it's hard to find proper work. But I think I found, you know, a pathway now, you know, with medical cannabis and obviously what I'm doing, building out Grow Gear and growing my own medical cannabis to help me, you know. But no, Brooksy, there's no way I would have played. And there's some parts of me that wish I stuck with baseball, but then I wouldn't have met you and you know, a lot of other guys, right? And that I do care about and love, right? So at the end of the day, yeah, it's a tough question, hard to answer, but yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
It's almost that old cliche, everything happens for a reason, but that kind of circumstance, it's like, wow, you know, everything that you went through was something that your body had to experience pain in yourself, right? And which is affecting you now afterwards. But you brought up there the medical cannabis speaker and advocate growing own medicine. And also, I believe you're working with, correct me if I'm wrong, this may have also been mentioned earlier, but Riley Cote is someone that you're working with this on.
Yep.
And I wanted to jump into that. You know, how did, you know, like you did discuss it a little bit, obviously, but working with Riley, how that jumped in and the whole movement with this medical cannabis.
Hey, Dave, can you stop talking? You keep talking and talking and talking all the time, man. I just want to let people know that they should download the new app, Living Sisu, all about sports, discounts, events. It's awesome. All right, Dave, you can go on with your show. It's enough.
Yeah, no, it's Riley and I kind of go back into our minor league career, and we had a couple fights in the Central Hockey League when I was playing in Texas, and he was in Memphis. And yeah, we fought and went back and forth, and that's just the way it was, right? And I was never friends with him. I actually, there's a video online where I went into Memphis's bench because he was running around, and I actually went after him in the bench, and it was what it was, right? But back in 2016, when I opened up in our national newspaper, the Globe and Mail, yeah, he called me right away. He said, "Fritter, what's up?" Right? And I just said, "Hey, what's going on, Riles?" And, you know, we obviously talked. And at that point in time, he was already in the cannabis space. And what brought him there was his own journey, but also his sister had MS very young and was using cannabis oil. And it ended up, yeah, just completely curing her too, right? And so we started engaging even more. And I started, you know, getting involved with him with his Hemp Heals Foundation. And then I'm an ambassador with Athletes for Care, and he co-founded that with Lindsay Lou Snyder. And that's Ed Snyder's daughter that own the Flyers. And we've got Darren McCarty on board. We've got Riley on board. We got Mike Tyson on board, Frank Shamrock from MMA. We've got Jim McMahon. And Athletes for Care is basically an educational sports platform to educate, you know, and get involved with community too, which is key. It helps others too. And a lot of, you know, the community and our fans look up to athletes. So it becomes very deep too, but it allows the athlete that's struggling and using the plant for recovery. And guys, we could talk for days about, you know, the different ways of using the plant. And it's not just smoking a joint and things like that, right? I grow and I can extract and I make my own edibles. It helps control my muscles and sleep. I can juice raw cannabis. There's so many ways of using the plant, right? And that's, you know, 102.1 in Toronto. They had an hour long show on cannabis and sport. I had an article with the NHL alumni in Leafly about cannabis and sport and hockey in particular. And the NHL now alumni has teamed up with Canopy Growth, and they're doing a big study. And what I'm involved with now with Grow Gear is very unique too, because the cost, right, of using medical cannabis is very expensive. And obviously with me being forced on low-level disability, you know, I was never able to sustain it until I started growing it legally, right? So this is the first time that now, you know, over all the years that I've been involved in the cannabis space, that I've actually been able to sustain it. Now I'm healing, right? And I'm sharing that now. And we're, you know, we've already done a presentation with the CFL alumni, with Leo Ezerins, the president, and Glenn Healy with the NHL alumni. So we're doing a lot. There's a lot of moving parts, but growing the plant to me is the best way possible, because there's so much to it too, right? And it gets me moving and it gets me active again, but gets me sharing too with those that can't afford it. And, you know, it's not for everybody, right? But again, it's an option not to take opiates and a lot of other harmful, addictive pharmaceutical medications. So it's a lot.
See, like, one thing that I wanted to ask is the feeling that you got talking with the NHL and the feedback that you got back from the NHL and even from the other organizations and leagues that you are bringing this forward to. The as I mentioned, the feeling that you got and the feedback overall that you've been.
Yeah, no, great question, right? About, you know, 2018, Riley Cote and I, we brought in a team of, you know, cannabis advocates that are involved in sports with our Athletes for Care, even to the CHL, the Canadian Hockey League alumni, and David Branch, just to say, hey, like, look, this is what's happening with our alumni, and we know that cannabis isn't good for kids, but we just wanted to actually educate you, David. And, you know, they were responsive, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, weeks after our meeting, they put out an anti-cannabis campaign. It was a video. I don't know if you guys saw that, but it was like a London Knights guy without the emblem, a kid dressing up, and then some hippie playing video games on a video and saying, hey, do you want to come over and get high, right? So we were walking right into a lot of stigma, a lot of culture, a lot of everything, right? But that there was just us trying to educate David and say, look at, you know, what we know, and even countries like Israel are using CBD as a neuroprotectant, you know, and there's no psychoactive effects with that part of the plant. So I don't know. There's a lot of stigma involved. There's a lot of pharmaceuticals and alcohol embedded with sponsorship within our game, right? And that leads into, you know, the NHL alumni and, you know, Riley, and I was working with him back in 2018 to do a presentation to the actual NHL alumni, and Glenn wasn't ready at that time. He didn't have the education at that point in time, right? So I ended up turning around and facilitating a presentation to the NHL Original Six alumni, and they're out of Toronto, and I've worked with them in the past with educating them, and they took us in open arms, like the Johnny Bowers when he was alive, and Kevin McClellan, four-time Stanley Cup winner, and just a lot of the older players, right? So we went in there and did a presentation at their Shopsy's Deli where they do their monthly meetings and everything. And yeah, TSN, Rick Westhead came in, and Rick ended up developing the legalized documentary series for TSN off of that, right? Which ended up spanning into Riley's story and growing hemp out in Pennsylvania. And then Mike Tyson was out at the Tyson Holistic Ranch and doing a lot of growing and unique things out there around sports and healing himself, right? So at the end of the day, yeah, it's just we walked into a lot of reefer madness and stigma, David and Brooksy, and now that's kind of past us. And we got a guy like Connor McDavid that came out and said, hey guys, you know, right out in the media and said, yeah, learn about the plant. Yeah, yeah, you guys have to, right? So there is a lot of NHL players that are using CBD actively and THC to control chronic pain. And good friend of mine, Zach Rinaldo, he plays for Calgary, role player, but you know, he's still playing in the NHL, and I love him, man. He's a great guy, good friend of mine. And, you know, he's actively using cannabis right now while playing, right? But the younger players are going to learn, right? Keep them away from all the anti-inflammatories and the pharmaceuticals that just wreak havoc on our our organs, right? Our kidneys, our livers, everything else. It's a plant, right? And alcohol has been embedded in our game for years. And that's another thing, too. We have to get away from that, right? And I look down here at the London Knights Arena, the Budweiser Gardens, right? You're not gonna see that name change to like Aurora Gardens, who Aurora Cannabis is one of the largest cannabis producers in the world, right? It's just we're involved in a lot of stigma right now and culture change and that too. But it's going to come, guys, in our lifetime too. It's got to, right? Because we're going to hear of more former players going through a lot of hardships and we've got a chance to heal here too, right? So it's good. It's good. I'm glad where things are going right now.
So, Rob, you know, I just want to get it out to, you know, people listening, like how important it is that ensuring that this message is put out to the public, to athletes, to bring forth this education about the problems that concussions have caused and what medical cannabis is doing for the sports world. You know, just how important is this?
Oh, yeah, it's game changing. Oh, for sure, Brooksy. It's like I said earlier on in your show, guys, is that we're dealing with the long-term effects of multiple concussions, and that's engaged not just because of fighting, right? We talked about hits and that too, right? And obviously, Brooksy, you've taken some hits, and you understand that, right? But listen, we're always going to have pain around the game, right? And Rick Westhead came out with another one for the listeners too, is the problem with pain. It came out with a couple weeks ago with Ryan Kessler, right? And a couple other NHL players that, you know, were taking Toradol and, you know, some really strong pharmaceutical solutions to, you know, control their chronic pain while playing at an elite level, right? So, and now Ryan Kessler has Crohn's disease, and now the specialists, and he's got some other things going on, are saying that's because of that long-term use of those medications, whether he was given them by trainers or whatnot, you know, that stigma surrounding plant medicine and even now psilocybin and mushrooms and things too, like they're looking at that medically within Health Canada. Like that would have been a better option. Would Ryan Kessler have the issues? Would a Steve Ludzig, who played in Niagara Falls in the OHL and played with the Blackhawks long-term, he's had Parkinson's and taking a lot of pharmaceuticals, and now Steve is up for a liver transplant too, right? So at the end of the day, it's a very serious discussion, and we all have to educate, right? And that's what it's about. It's just about education, and we have to connect, and I appreciate you guys having me on board, right? Just to share that too, right? And it's going to help somebody out here listening too. You don't have to be a former athlete to be struggling, right, with chronic illness, right? There are options and better options, and you can heal too, right? So it's amazing.
Hey, yeah. This is where that saying that we all grew up with, that no pain, no gain. This is something that I think is changing in the sports world, because that no pain, no gain is not so true anymore, because that pain is causing a lot of issues for a lot of people now. And that old saying was probably the biggest saying when we were growing up. I probably heard it a million times playing, from coaches, from my dad. Like that was the mentality. And I'm so glad that you were able to come on the show, share your story. I'm so grateful for this time with you, and it's so good to get this out there for people. So thank you, Rob. It means a lot to us on this show, and I think people that get a chance to listen to this, it will open some eyes. So I think this was a great episode. I'm so thankful you were able to come on and talk, I can't thank you enough.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Brooksy, and look, we go way back, man, and I'm always going to be a brother, a teammate to you, and you helped me too, right, and you're my friend, and you'd always have my back, and you still do today, right? And obviously introducing me to David too. And thank you, David, and allowing me to talk, right? It's hard. It's a tough conversation, but you guys bring out the right questions, and I love your podcast, and that's what it's about too, right? It's not just about you know, us as former players, right? It's about us connecting with the audience too and trying to help somebody that's suffering too, whether it's mental health, whether it's chronic pain or any type of chronic illness, right? We all have to, it's life, right? And yeah, unfortunately, maybe my life is going to be cut short. I've been told that, right? But at the end of the day, I'm not going to change the way I played after retirement. I got to continue to fight and stand up for guys. And that's what I'm all about. And I appreciate you guys having me on board. And I love your show. And yeah, just keep up the great work. And I know you guys got a studio going and everything else. And yeah, I just can't wait to support you guys back on in the future. And just, yeah, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time for me.
Well, you're definitely fighting. Sorry, Dave. I was just saying, like, it's kind of like that fight that you had as a fighter. It hasn't changed. You're just fighting a new thing, and you're fighting to gain awareness so that somebody won't go through what you're going through. And I thank you for continuing to fight, bud. I really do. It means a lot.
Yeah, that means a lot coming from you, and thank you. And I won't stop. You know that. And no, I appreciate it, guys. And love Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, and you couldn't have a better spot, guys, to be broadcasting your show. And yeah, I look forward to keeping in touch, and let's keep in touch. And yeah, anybody can reach out to me, any former players or anybody, right? Drop me a line on Facebook, Robert Thrid, or you know, you can email me at robrob@growgear.com gear, all one word, growgear, .co. So, you know, anybody that's struggling or wants more, you know, education on medical cannabis or other alternatives, you know, for chronic pain or chronic illness or whatever, right? That's what it's all about. Thank you, guys. Definitely. Appreciate it.
There is one thing, though, that we will do before we let you go. There's one thing that we always ask our guests. We have bonus questions, questions that you're going to throw you out of the blue, make you think a little bit. And it's something nice. We kind of just do with every guest. And I'm going to go first. I like saving Brooksy for last with them, because I will say, honestly, and it's hard for me to admit, but I think he does ask the better questions for it all the time. He's usually had a couple signature ones, so I'll let him have that. But the one thing that I wanted to bring up, okay, and I kind of wanted to go to your overall playing days, what was your favorite moment as a hockey player? What is one moment you can recall? Like, I know you mentioned that you sat beside in the same room Brett Hall, Al MacInnis, etc., but yourself as a player, what is your favorite moment that you can recall?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because I've had a lot, right? It's just different parts of my career, and you know, just getting up even to the NHL level as a free agent and a tryout, right? But it would have to be, you know, my first London Knights game, right? After being, you know, cut, the last cut on the team, and, you know, being a late round draft pick. But then I'll never forget that game, you know, my first game. And they started me too, right? And yeah, I had a fight first shift. I'll remember it was right in Niagara Falls, right? So at the end of the day, that's probably right, because you know, you're growing up and you're young and you're cut, and then your hometown and all your buddies are thinking, oh, you're not going to make it, right? And then, you know, I just worked extra hard and did what I was told, right? And so it probably, my first game, definitely with the Knights.
Brooksy.
Yeah, so my question, I usually go back and ask the question about, you know, who had the biggest influence on your career, and you know, who's like kind of helped mold who you are as a hockey player. I'm not going to do that today, but I'm going to stick to it a bit. So what I'm going to ask you is, I'm, you know, since you've retired and with all this stuff that you've been going through, who has had a huge influence on, you know, guiding you to this, to where you are now in the cannabis world, your health? Who has had that biggest influence since you've retired and been going through all this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't even have to think about it, Brooksy, and that's my daughter, Tegan, right? So at the end of the day, you know, I had a lot of family members and friends, you know, when I was at my sickest moment, and, you know, there was times I was suicidal. I've been open. It's in my One Last Fight story, right? And I'd always, you know, look at her and, I didn't want to give up, right? And I knew that it wasn't my fault, right? I was put in positions young, right? And, you know, I was never a fighter growing up. It was quite the opposite. I got picked on. I was a redhead. I was, you know, full of beans. It was just, at the end of the day, it's got to be my daughter, right? Because, yeah, without her, then I probably would have taken the easy way out, Brooksy, because, yeah, it's a lot of pain, right? So, yeah, definitely my daughter, 100%.
A good answer. That's probably one of the best answers that we've had on the show, to be honest with you. I like that. That was a great, great point. You know, and family is everything, and that's one thing that we stress a lot here, even on the show, even all of us are not fully related. We're a tight family here on the Game Sports Show and Gem, and to have heard your story, Rob, you know, it makes me feel that I was really involved, just into your story and really into it. And it's amazing what you've done, you know, as a player, you know, being a warrior, but just being that same individual off the ice. The hockey community thanks you. We thank you as a Gem brand, but also just for being who you are, because it's just amazing to have individuals like yourself and guys who are part of your team come forward and bring this concern forward to help improve the overall athletic community. Because it's not just hockey you're talking about. You're talking football. You're talking, heck, it could be basketball, any sport. You know,
soccer. Yeah, you're right. Anything. You're right. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you, David.
Of course, and it's certainly something that the listeners had a treat to hear. You know, it's something we talked about, hockey, something that the listeners are familiar with a lot of our athletes that we have on their playing days. But to have that effect when you're off the ice afterwards, that is something more powerful to bring forward than what you ever did on the ice, flat out, period. So I want to say, on behalf of the Game Sports Show and Gem, myself and Brooksy's already gave you a heartfelt thank you. I didn't get the opportunity to give you as big as a heartfelt thank you. I know you two have a lot of personal history, but I appreciate you coming on here. And we definitely look forward to having you on in the future and some other type of capacity show, working together on things, promoting things together, whatever it may be. We will certainly be in touch.
Awesome. Thank you, David. And again, I appreciate you and taking care of Brooksy. And you guys don't get any more little scraps there online. And no, you guys are good together. It's you bring a lot of compassion, Brooksy's big heart, and obviously your understanding. And I appreciate your support. And, you know, many players do. And no, thank you, guys. Had a great time tonight, and look forward to chatting with you again.
Certainly. Brooksy, I want to say thank you to you too, I guess. You know, there's somebody else there on the line besides Rob. I may as well say thank you to you.
No problem, Dave. I'm always here to carry you on, you know. But, you know, on a funny note, you know, I want to go back to something Rob said and what you said about where they said, you know what, anytime someone's going to find you if you're good enough. And, you know, whether it be on the backyard skating, you know, in a backyard rink. This explains a lot. Are you still waiting for them to come find you, Dave? Because he's on that backyard rink a lot, and I know he's just waiting for that scout to show up.
Honestly,
I know it.
I'm winning back-to-back Stanley Cups in NHL 21 franchise mode, so I'm actually hoping that GM can call me, you know, to eventually get an assistant to him so I can bring forth success to an organization that way, because I can't bring forth that skill anymore on the ice. I can't. But you know what? I was proud to keep up with you the other night, though, Brooksy. So I must still got it in the tank somewhere.
Yeah. I was going backwards, but it's okay.
Love it. Love it, guys. Yeah.
Make sure you hit follow, like, and subscribe on all of our platforms on Gem. And again, thank you to Rob and to Brooksy. Make sure you get in touch with Rob with any kind of concern, especially the medical cannabis. And anything you just want to talk general to him, obviously, look how great of a guy he is. Just reach out to him. You can reach out to him on Facebook and his email, as he mentioned. And as I mentioned, again, if you can follow on all of our platforms, and that includes Spotify, Apple, Podbean, Amazon, and Podtail podcast platforms, including Facebook and Instagram, just at The Game Sports Show. Very easy to find us, and in particular with our website, thegamesportsshow.com. So getting to our conclusions here, I want to say thank you again to Rob and to Brendan. I've already said it numerous times, but I will continue to say it. And to thank you to you, the listeners, for making us a part of your night, as always, here on these special edition uploads of the game. I'd like to remind you to keep your stick on the ice, swing your bats, catch your touchdowns, drain your threes, and shoot your shots. Booyah.
You can follow The Game Sports Show on Facebook and Instagram at The Game Sports Show.